You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
I'm Elias Jabour from MD Anderson Cancer Center, and I'm joined today by my esteemed colleague, Professor Stelles from University of Munster. Professor Stelles, to start, could you please give us a brief background on the treatment outcome of older patients with ALL?
Yes, of course. Older patients with ALL have historically had poor outcome when treated with conventional chemotherapy, with 5-year survival rates of approximately 20%. Numerous factors contribute to lower survival rates compared to younger patients, including adverse disease biology among older patients, like high-risk genetic alterations. But a major issue is the poor tolerance to intensive chemotherapy regimens, most likely to the presence of comorbidities, high rates of early deaths, and treatment-related mortality and remission. Attempts to decrease the intensity of therapy have improved treatment-related mortality, but the trade-off associated with this approach is higher rates of relapse. We recently published a retrospective analysis of the course of 93 patients aged older than 55 years of age with ALL who received age-adapted pediatric-inspired chemotherapy regimens at our center between May 2003 and October 2020. We found that intensive treatment is feasible in the selected elderly patient population, but the outcome seemed to have improved only modestly with the conventional therapy. They observed high rates of relapse and deaths in complete remission underlined the need for novel therapeutic strategies. Novel agents originally approved for the treatment of relapse or refractory ALL, such as blinatumomab or inotuzumab, are being investigated for the treatment of older adults with newly diagnosed B precursor ALL, with the hope to minimize treatment-related mortality in addition to improve treatment efficacy. Blinatumomab was first approved in 2014 by the FDA and in 2015 by the EMA for CD19-positive B precursor relapse or refractory ALL, and subsequently in 2018 for CD19-positive B precursor ALL in first or second complete remission with measurable residual disease greater or equal 0.1%. Blinatumomab is a CD19-directed B-specific antibody that engages T cells to recognize and eliminate CD19-positive blasts. Inotuzumab was approved in 2017 by the FDA and the EMA for CD22-positive B-cell refractory or relapsed acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Inotuzumab is a humanized anti-CD22 antibody conjugated to chalicidomycin, a cytotoxic antibiotic. Upon the binding of CD22 on the surface of ALL blasts, the CD22 conjugate complex is rapidly internalized and chalicidomycin is released, leading to cell apoptosis. Elderly patients, as already mentioned, are usually not eligible for intensive chemotherapy approaches. Prognosis was dismal when treated with different age-adapted conventional chemotherapy protocols. However, we now have results from multiple studies investigating inotuzumab as a frontline treatment option for older patients with ALL. Participants included in these studies were greater or equal than 55 years old with newly diagnosed Philadelphia chromosome negative B precursor ALL. These studies excluded patients with risk factors for poor outcome, such as concurrent or chronic liver disease, active infection not controlled by antibiotics, clinical evidence of grade 3-4 heart failure or secondary malignancies. Extramedullary relapses, particularly central nervous system manifestations, are an important consideration in ALL treatment. Consequently, studies incorporating inotuzumab and other novel agents like blinatumomab in the frontline therapy setting, including those with limited chemotherapy, incorporated intrathecal prophylactic treatment with drugs that reach a central nervous system like methotrexate. Professor Jabba, moving on, could you tell us about your study that investigated the combination of Eno with mini hypersievert with or without blinatumomab?
Of course. Thank you for the great background, Professor Stelles. So we recently updated the results for phase 2 study of mini CVD plus inotuzumab with or without blinatumomab in older patients with newly diagnosed Philadelphia positive, Philadelphia negative ALL. I'd like to remind the audience the mini CBD is a major reduction of the hyper-CVAD, where cyclophosphamide and dexamethasone are reduced by 50%. We omitted anthracyclines, methotrexate reduced by 75%, and cetirizine were given at 0.5 grams square per dose at times four doses. To be eligible, patient should be 60 years and older and having ECOG performance status of 0 to 3 with adequate organ functions. Patient would receive the mini CBD for up to 8 cycles and inotuzumab at a dose of 1.3 to 1.8 mg square on day 3 of cycle 1 and 0.8 to 1.3 mg square on day 3 of cycle 2 to 4. Patients who are CD20 positive would receive rituximab and intrathecal prophylactic chemotherapy were given during the first 4 cycles. After that, after completing 8 cycles of treatment, patients will receive maintenance therapy with PARP for up to 3 years. The protocol was later amended to decrease the risk of venous occlusive disease, where inotuzumab was given in a biweekly fashion from patient 50 and onward. Patients will receive during cycle 1, 0.6 mg square on day 2 and 0.3 mg per square on day 8. And from, this is on cycle 1, from cycle 2 and to cycle 4, patients will receive 0.3 mg square on day 2 and 0.3 mg meter square on day 8. So total dose of inotuzumab given was 2.7 mg per meter square. After the first 4 course of mini CVD, patients will receive 4 cycles of daratumumab, given 4 weeks every 6 weeks. After that, we moved to a maintenance program with 12 cyclesof PARP and 1 cycle of Oblina after 3 courses of PARP. So therefore, we will give 12 PARP and 4 Oblina, 1 Oblina after 3 cycles of PARP. As I said, the cumulative dose of inotuzumab was reduced from 4.3 mg per square before the amendment to 2.7 mg per square after the amendment. And the aim was to reduce the VOD risk. Overall, 80 patients were treated in this study and included in the analysis. CS prophylaxis consisted of intrathecal therapy with methotrexate at 12 mg and cetirizine 100 mg, given alternatively on day 2, and day 7 of cycle 1 to 4 for a total of 8 doses. At the time of enrollment, 6 patients were in CR and the rest were active disease, 72 patients. Median age was 68 and 39% were 70 years and older. 39% were positive for P53 mutation and 24% had an adverse risk karyotype.
Professor Chepa, thank you very much for the brief overview of your study. What was the outcome you observed in the study?
Thank you. When it comes to outcome, as I said, some patients were enrolled in CR, but 74 patients were evaluable for morphologic response. Assessment of these patients, 73 responded and achieved an objective response, 99% response rate. MRD negativity assessed by flow cytometry was achieved in 80% of the patients, 61 of the 76 after cycle 1, and 94% overall, 74 of the 79 patients evaluable for MRD. The mortality rate at 30 days and 60 days were 0% and 3% respectively, very well tolerable regimen. Overall, 79 patients achieved a remission. Of these, 11 relapsed, 14%, 4 or 5% underwent allogeneic stem cell transplantation in first remission. Of these 4 patients, 1 subsequently relapsed. 40% or 32 patients were alive in remission without stem cell transplantation, and 30 patients or 40% died in remission. Of these deaths, 9 were from sepsis, 3 were from venous occlusive disease, and 9 from the acquisition of MDS or AML. 11 patients died from miscellaneous causes. With a median follow-up of 61 months, the 5-year CR and overall survival rate were found to be 76% and 46% respectively. The 5-year overall survival rate were superior in patients who were aged 6 to 69 versus 70 years and older. These rates were 57% compared to 28%, and the p-value was significant. Again, we look at the outcome without versus with poor risk cytogenetics. These were 55% versus 21% p-value being significant. Then we look at the outcome by P53 mutations, and these rates were 47% compared to 35% p-value of 0.34. The 5-year overall survival rate for patient age between 60 and 64 was 65%. Between those aged 65 to 69 was 50%. And for patients who were 70 years and older, the rate was 28%. Then we compared outcome of patient age between 6 to 69 and those who are 70 years and older. Those who are 70 years and older were more likely to die in remission. These rates were 63% compared to 30% in a younger population. We analyzed outcome by age and cytogenetics. The best 5-year overall survival rate was observed among patients aged 6 to 69 without any poor-risk cytogenetics. For example, here, the 6 to 69 years old who do not have poor-risk cytogenetics had a 5-year survival rate of 70%. This rate was 31% for patients who are 6 to 69 with poor-risk cytogenetics, those who are 70 years and older. With non-poor-risk cytogenetics, the 5-year survival was 36%. And finally, those who are 70 years and older and having poor-risk karyotype, the 5-year survival is dismal. Actually, it's 0%.
Quite impressive results for this elderly patient population. How do the efficacy outcome in this study compare with outcome of the observed using chemo-alone approaches for this patient population?
Well, we published a propensity score matching comparing the mini CVD with INO plus or minus blinatumomab with the hyper-CVAD dose adjusted. The mini CVD plus with or without blinatumomab was found to be superior to the hyper-CVAD and better overall survival. And that was propensity score matching, of course, two prospective phase 2 trials, not phase 3 randomized trial.
Professor Rapper, it appears that factors associated with inferior outcome, like older age, high-risk cytogenetic in the current study, may be associated with worse overall survival. Do you approach the treatment of patients with these risk factors differently?
Thanks again. We're trying to eliminate the chemotherapy portion by delivering a chemotherapy approach. Essentially, what we're doing, we may give some steroid at the beginning and minor vincristine, but essentially to deliver a chemotherapy-free with inotuzumab and blinatumomab. This approach is also being adopted by the Alliance investigators. So far, they showed the data at the last ASCO and EHA meeting, where they reported a one-year survival of approximately 80%. Again, these are very preliminary data. When it comes to safety, after a median follow-up of 33 months, in our study, 9 patients or 11% developed MDS-AML. Of these, 7 had a detectable TP53 mutation in a myeloid clone. Overall, 6 patients or 8% developed veno-occlusive disease, with 1 patient developing the disease after subsequent allogeneic stem cell transplantation.
Professor Jabbar, how do the number of deaths in remission in the current study compare with conventionally used treatments in this patient population?
Of course, we're still not so happy that having deaths in CR, and that's unfortunate. However, there were fewer deaths in the current study compared with conventional treatment. However, this did not apply to patients who are 70 years and older.
Okay, one additional question to the safety. How frequent is the development of veno-occlusive disease following treatment with the current available and other investigational treatment regimens in this patient population? What do you think might be used in to improve the safety profile?
Well, definitely veno-occlusive disease is associated with older age. We know older patients can are at higher risk. However, what we've done so far is reducing inotuzumab dose and fractioning the dose of inotuzumab. And by doing so, we've shown so far that if we reduce the dose and not to go above 2.5 milligram per meter squared, we can reduce the VOD risk, VOD complications. So what we're doing in at our institution is to decrease the dose of inotuzumab given in biweekly, phase out inotuzumab from transplant by adding blinatumomab as a consolidation, and giving ursodiol as a prophylactic use to avoid veno-occlusive disease, and we've been successful by doing so. So then, what we've learned a lot, actually, from this trial, and I'd like to hear as well from Dr. Stelis what he's doing in Germany, the use of inotuzumab with low-dose chemotherapy, and then despite adjusting the dose of the chemotherapy and the immune therapy, we are still having a problem in patients who are 70 years and older dying in remission. So we're looking forward to further attenuate the chemotherapy regimen and walk away from chemotherapy by adding ino-blina combination. Any additional comment, Professor Stelis?
Not at this point, but anyway, I will discuss our study and probably a slightly different approach to use novel agents in the future.
Okay, great. So, Professor Stelis, you were the lead investigator in a GMAL Initial 1 trial. Please, can you tell us about it a little bit?
Yes, of course. The GMAL Initial 1 study was an open-label phase 2 trial with inotuzumab treatment in older patients with newly diagnosed Ph-negative B-precursor ALL. the efficacy and safety of a treatment regimen that include chemotherapy-free induction therapy over 9 weeks, followed by conventional chemotherapy and maintenance therapy, was evaluated in 43 patients aged older than 55 years of age. The first induction cycle consisted of inotuzumab as a dose of 0.8 milligrams per square meter on day one, followed by 0.5 milligrams per square meter on day 8 and 15, together with dexamethasone on 2 days, as day 7 and 8, with a dose of 10 milligrams per square meter, and then again dexamethasone from days 14 to 70 at the same dose, and one dose of intrathecal injection of metotrexate, cytarabine, and dexamethasone. The second and third induction cycles consisted of 0.5 milligram per square meter inotuzumab on day 1, 8, and 15, plus again intrathecal prophylactic treatment with metotrexate, cytarabine, and dexamethasone. Patients who achieved a complete remission were offered 5 conventional consolidation therapies, 3 with intermediate dose of methotrexate and asparaginases, and 2 cycles of intermediate dose cytarabine, and 1 cycle of reinduction therapy consisting of edaravusin, cytarabine, cyclophosphamide, and dexamethasone. In patients with CD22-positive ALL, this consolidation therapy was combined with rituximab, followed by maintenance therapy in the second year with 6-mecaptoporin and methotrexate. Primary endpoint of our study was event-free survival at 12 months follow-up, with an event defined as persisting bone marrow blast after 2 cycles of inotuzumab induction therapy, relapse or death. An event rate of below or equal 40% at 12 months follow-up was used to demonstrate that the experimental treatment was very promising for additional testing. Of 45 patients enrolled in the study, 43 were analyzed for the primary endpoint. 2 patients were excluded by protocol because they received only 1 cycle of induction therapy or withdrew consent. The median patient age in our study was 64 years. Median bone marrow blast count at study inclusion was 80%, and median CD22 expression on leukemic blasts were 69%. Overall, 38 patients were diagnosed with common ALL and 5 patients were diagnosed with a Pro-B ALL. Most of the patients, so 42 of 43 patients, completed all 3 induction therapy cycles.
Professor Sellers, can you explain the rationale behind administering inotuzumab without chemotherapy during induction?
Inotuzumab has demonstrated high complete remission rates in the relapse or refractory setting. Consequently, we saw that additional chemotherapy given parallel to inotuzumab only increased toxicity. Therefore, we decided to give conventional chemotherapy after induction therapy with inotuzumab.
Okay, thank you. What were the outcome that you observed in this study?
Yeah, we were quite surprised with our results. All of the available patients, so 43 patients, achieved a complete remission primarily after the first induction therapy. The times between first and second induction therapy, second and third induction therapy, and third induction therapy, and the first consolidation therapy were 21, 28, and 30 days, respectively, demonstrating that the feasibility of this approach was quite evident. MRD negativity was achieved by 23 patients of the 43 patients, so more than 50% of the patients achieved their MRD negative status after second induction therapy, which increased to 74% after the third induction cycle. With a median follow-up of 697 days, the 1 and 2 year overall survival rates were 91 and 81% respectively. No deaths were observed in our study within the first 6 months after starting of induction therapy, clearly indicating the promising toxicity profile of our approach. The event rate was 12% within the first year after study inclusion, 3 deaths in CR, and 2 patients relapsed. The 1 and 2 year event-free survival rates were 88 and 73% respectively. Subsequent treatment included blinatumomab for 7 patients with persisting or recurrence of minimal residual disease or relapse, and 9 patients received an allogeneic stem cell transplantation, either in CR1 or beyond CR1. Classical factors such as age, diagnosis of Pro-B ALL, high disease burden at diagnosis, comorbidity or a measurable residual disease after induction therapy that were usually associated with inferior survival outcome had no significant impact in our study population.
Thank you. How do these efficacy outcomes compare with the current standard of care in Germany for older patients with newly diagnosed ALL?
Thank you for the question. With the observed complete remission rate being so high, so more or less 100%, and the high percentage of patients being MRD negative after induction therapy, the treatment used in the initial one trial is clearly superior to all therapy approaches used in the past in our study group.
That's excellent. Professor Stelos, it's interesting that none of the classical factors associated with inferior survival outcomes impacted overall survival or event-free survival in the current study. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, quite interesting to see these high rates of remission. And one explanation might be that the classical high risk factors like high leukocyte counts or partial or no complete remission after induction therapy might have only a minor impact on the outcome in our study or in other studies using novel antibody-based therapy, as these novel studies allow high remission rates even in the early phase of initial treatment.
Any word on the safety?
Yes, the tolerability and safety of the study treatment was quite good. We saw some hematotoxicity, especially in the after the first induction cycle, but the rates of relevant leukocytopenia, anemia, and thrombocytopenia decreased significantly during the second and third course. So we started with greater or equal and grade 3 adverse leukocytopenia in the first cycle, for example, of 74%. This decreased to 19% in the second cycle and 2% in the third cycle. The same could be observed for anemia and thrombocytopenia. And more importantly, liver toxicity was only minor problems. We 14% had elevated liver enzymes, greater or equals grade 3, with 14% in the first cycle, 5% in the second cycle, and no patients with relevant liver toxicity in the third cycle. There was one patient with suspected renal occlusive disease after the second cycle, and this was this patient who only received 2 induction cycles and then continued to conventional therapy.
Professor Stelos, can you elaborate more on your experiences managing the adverse event that patient experienced on this treatment regimen, please?
With regard to inotuzumab, liver toxicity is, of course, of special interest. In our study, we observed some elevated liver enzymes, as already mentioned, mainly during the first induction cycles. However, this became a tricky freezing problem during the follow-up, and consequently, monitoring of liver function is important, but severe toxicities are rare.
So is there any helpful information on the management of this regimen that you can provide to a center that is using this treatment approach for the first time?
Yeah, of course. Besides monitoring of liver function, it's quite important to monitor hematopoiesis as hematotoxicities can occur, especially in the early treatment phase. And to prevent some of the liver toxicity, we also recommended, like in your study, Ozodex oxyhydrochloride or ASIC for prevention of liver toxicity. In addition, one should consider antibiotic treatment in case of severe neutropenia. However, to our experience, in induction with inotuzumab is possible in the outpatient setting. And in this case, I would recommend follow-up with the patient at least twice weekly.
So great, great presentation, great study. Congratulations on the results. So now we have the mini-CVD I know in USA and your regimen, the GMAL in Europe. So where this regimen is going after that? So this is a single-arm trial. Do you think INO can become standard of care in a frontline with a randomized study? What is your view on this?
Yeah, I hope so that we will find inotuzumab in that treatment and some recommendation. It's still not approved in Europe, so we will have some problems with reimbursement. But anyway, we have no good option with conventional therapy in elderly patients. And of course, we have to test this approach in prospective trials and probably also in registered trials to learn more about that.
You know, in the USA, we are working with a cooperative group for patients who are from 55 and older, unfit for intensive chemotherapy. They're being randomized to either mini-CVD, inotuzumab, or hyper-CVAD dose adjusted, followed by blinded consolidation. And hopefully this will confirm our findings and establish INO as standard of care, although that there may be still a problem for reimbursement in the future, we'll see.
Professor Jabbar, like your study of mini hyper CVAT plus ENO with or worse without blinatumomab, the EVAL ENO study already also investigated ENO chemo combination regimen in older patients with newly diagnosed ALL. Can you briefly provide us with some background of the study, tell us some of the highlights and how to compare the study with your described approach?
Of course, thank you. As a background, the EVAL-INO study is a single-arm prospective phase 2 study evaluating the activity and safety of frontline atezolizumab combined to low-intensity chemotherapy in 131 patients. It's quite a large study, age 55 years and older, with CD22-positive disease, should be at least 20% or more of positive blast cells, of course, Philadelphia-negative BCL-ALL. The treatment regimen included pre-phase, induction, consolidation, and maintenance. After pre-phase, including 5 days of dexamethasone, 10 milligrams daily, and intrathecal methotrexate, an induction regimen was delivered in two parts. The induction part one consisted of vincristine 2 milligrams, 1 milligram for those aged 70 years and older, on days 1, 8, 15, and 22, and dexamethasone 20 milligrams on days 1, 2, 8, 9, 15, 16, 22, and 23, combined with three injections of inotuzumab given at a dose of 0.8 milligrams squared on day 1 and 0.5 milligrams per square on day 8 and 0.5 milligrams squared on day 15. This is 1.8 milligrams per square during induction part 1. Induction part 2 was offered to patients who responded to achieve a CR or CRP, means CR without full platelet recovery, platelet below 100,000 after induction 1, or as a salvage therapy, and patient would receive during induction part 2 dexamethasone at 20 milligrams on days 1 and 8, cyclophosphamide 300 milligrams square from days 1 to 3, and one triple intrathecal chemotherapy on day 2, and two injections of inotuzumab at 0.5 milligrams square on day 1 and 0.5 milligrams square on day 8, or 1 milligram square total dose. So added to the total dose of inotuzumab will be 2.8 milligrams per meter square. Patients who responded after induction part 1 and 2, CR-CRP, then received 6 cycles of consolidation treatment. This was followed by pump maintenance therapy for 18 months.
Great. Thank you very much again for this overview. Can you explain how the low-intensity chemotherapy combination in this ENO study was different to your study?
You know, in both studies, we limited the dose of inotuzumab to avoid veno-occlusive disease. In our study, it was 2.4, 2.7 milligrams squared, and here 2.8. So we both limited the dose of inotuzumab. However, in our study in Houston, after the amendment, we proceeded to a consolidation phase with blinatumomab, where in an EWAL study, there was no blinatumomab consolidation given.
What was the outcome observed in the EWAL-ENO study?
So I will divide here the efficacy and safety. First, when it comes to efficacy, the objective response rate or CR-CRP rate was 88.5% after induction 1 and went up to 90% after induction 2. MRD negativity was observed in 81% of the patient or 80 of the 99 patients who responded and tested after induction phase 2. At a median follow-up of 15 months, the 1 year and 2 year overall survival rate were 72.5%. The primary endpoint set by the study was 70%, so the study was successful, and 54% at year 2. Respectively, the 1 and 2 year leukemia free survival was 65% at year 1, 50% almost at week 2, at year 2. When it comes to safety, the grade 3 and 4 liver toxicity reported was in 21 patients, 16%, including 3 patients or 2.2% with transient veno-occlusive disease. 4 patients, 3%, died during induction phase 1. None died during induction phase 2. During follow-up, 50 patients died or 38.2%. Of those, 29 deaths were attributed to disease relapse.
Professor Jabbar, like the previous chemotherapy combination studies that you discussed, the current EVAL-ENO study uses low-intensity chemotherapy combination with ENO. Why do you think that the efficacy and safety outcomes are so different?
You know, that I think the tricky reason, it's hard to compare across trials, but in my opinion, the tricky reasons could be the shortfall of the study, number one. Number two is age of the participants, and third, absence of blinatumomab. So in our study, we decided to space out transplant and to add Oblina to deepen the responses. And therefore, we have less relapses than the study done by the E1 group in Europe.
Okay, thank you. Do you believe that the current treatment regimen and safety profile would be acceptable for the treatment of older patients with newly diagnosed ALL in the clinic? How does the safety profile compare with the current available investigational treatment regimens for this patient population?
Dr. Salas, as you highlighted at the beginning of the presentation today, that the older patients have an unmet need. I think we made progress compared to what we had before, compared to your standard of care, compared to the hypercVAD or others. No doubt in my mind, anitizumab alone combined with chemotherapy and sequential concomitant did improve the outcome. However, we still some struggling with some deaths in CR and relapses, and therefore we can do better than this. I think the future is to use less chemotherapy, and adding Blina is helpful. We know the data already from Blina in MRD and in MRD negative disease as a consolation improved outcome. I think the future will be to further build on this by keep inotuzumab, reducing chemotherapy, and add sequential blinatumomab down the road. I think we have evidence today that inotuzumab fractionated and keep the dose limited to certain extent does improve the outcome. So it should be part of any backbone regimen. And I think reducing further the chemotherapy and adding more target approach will help improving the outcome down the road.
Okay, great. Thank you much. So the question remains open if we need, at least in the induction phase, additional chemotherapy, or is it worthwhile to go for inotuzumab monotherapy followed by Blina or other chemotherapy combinations? At least Blina seem to be very, very effective in the combination with Eno for first-line treatment in ALL patients.
Yeah. So I think my take-home message from the session today, first of all, thank you, Professor Salas, for being with me today here. We made progress. You know, the outcome of older patient is dismal, very low survival. In fact, the five-year survival rate across the Atlantic in Europe and USA is below 20%, therefore the unmet need. And we've shown that the combination of INO plus low-dose chemotherapy does improve the responses, improve the MRD negativity, less relapses, and a better outcome. We've shown in a propensity score matching improving survival. So the low-dose inotuzumab followed by consolidation with the blinatumomab really lead us to have a five-year survival of 46 to 50%, which is really great for older patients. And that is a new standard of care, I think, for older patients with ALL.
I absolutely agree. And looking back in the past where we treated elderly patients and also still treating younger patients with intensive chemotherapy, which usually means for the patients that they have to stay in hospital for a couple of weeks or in the first year for several months, in summation, novel approaches, including antibody-based treatments, maybe give us an option for the future to treat patients more in the outpatient setting, which is clearly associated with a better tolerance from the patient side and probably will improve side effects and survival outcome.
Excellent. I think we have a new standard of care. We hope for a complete findings. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. So actually, we have now discussed the reimbursement with the healthcare provider. In the German GMR study group, we'll implement a new study protocol where we try to randomly compare standard chemotherapy with Eno in the middle-aged older patients, so up to 65 years of age. So we will still have the problem with the older patients. But anyway, in this setting, the approach with the combination of Eno and Blina without chemotherapy, at least for patients older than 70 years of age, might be an option that will not cure the patients in a huge amount. But anyway, the patient fitness will be preserved with this new approach.
Wonderful. This is great. Thank you very much.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.